Caesar and the Romans and those oldies but goodies. Hello, everybody. I'm Jerry Pippin, and we are saluting the oldies but goodies today. We're going all the way back at our time machine to June 15th, 1957. It was a warm day in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The city powers that be had decided to observe the 50th anniversary of the state of Oklahoma becoming a state, that they decided to have a time capsule. Downtown that day, they put a 1957 Plymouth Belvedere into a steel vault with all types of documents about 1957. Then they buried it. This was a time capsule that only if you were around in 1957 you would understand. In the 50s, we had indeed a love affair with the car, especially the hardtop two-door coupe. There was the 57 Chevy, Ford had a version, and then there was the Plymouth. Why the Plymouth? Well, I think it must have been politics. One of the reasons we had a love affair with cars back then, gasoline was 30 cents a gallon. They will find, among other things, 5 quarts of oil and 10 gallons of gasoline. I guess they thought back then that in the 21st century, maybe we would not be using the combustion engine. Obviously, since Tulsa is the oil capital of the world, they underestimated the power of the petroleum lobby. So in observance of this puzzling ritual taking place in Tulsa today, June 15th, we have decided to visit the world of the 50s and the 60s. We're putting an emphasis on the media because we have as our guest Mike Miller. Mike was a radio DJ at KTUL Radio, then later in the 60s, he did the 10 o'clock news. Actually, he did it on all three network TV stations. No, not at the same time. Back then, you could change in the market pretty easily. In fact, that's how you got a raise. Mike has a book out that's really a great read. It covers those early days in Tulsa and later his work in Washington, D.C., where he worked with many of the media and political giants of our time. The name of the book is How High Can I Stoop? We have a link to it if you'd like to buy it from Amazon. Mike joined us for a wide-ranging chat, but he didn't join us in Tulsa, nor in Houston where he now lives, but right here in my hometown of Muskogee. That's a bedroom community of Tulsa. The Chamber of Commerce here will love me saying that. In a moment, we're going to bring in Mike, but, you know, 57 I remember every day at 4:45 on Channel 8, Dick Clark had 15 minutes. That's all All-American Bandstand lasted at that time. He had a Saturday hour show, but every day at 4:45 for 15 minutes, it was American Bandstand.
We're going hopping, hop, we're going hopping today. Where things are popping, hop, Philadelphia way. We're going to drop it, hop, on all the music they play on the bandstand. We're going swinging, swing, we're going to swing in the crowd. And we'll be clinging, and floating high as a cloud. The phones are ringing, my mom and dad are so proud. I'm on bandstand. Because I'm on the American Bandstand. When we dance, we'll slow and show all the guys in the grandstand. What a swinger I am on American Bandstand. We're going hopping, we're going hopping today. We're things are popping, the Philadelphia way. We're going to drop it, I love the music they play. I'm a bandstand,
bandstand. I'm making my mark.
See this joint is jumping. They need some jump on the stairs to see us arrive. Hey, it's Mr. Dick Clark. What a place you got here. Swell spot. The music's hot here. Beverly East. Give it at least a 75. Now for all you chose, it goes by American Handstand. Because I'm on the American Bandstand. As we dance, we'll slow and show when the guys on the grandstand that I like my girl, but I love American Bandstand.
Mike Miller, it's a pleasure meeting you in person.
Same here, Jerry. We've talked a lot on the radio.
Yeah, we did. A lot of time. And we used to do when we were on the KBIX years ago. We used to talk when you were in Virginia.
Right.
We used to talk politics, and you were our GOP representative.
I brought balance.
Yes, yes, kind of.
Unbalanced balance.
And in addition to that, we talked about the Binion trial.
Right.
Because you had a career not only in Tulsa Radio and Washington, D.C., radio and TV, but also you were involved with Senator Chick Heck out in Las Vegas and other people. We'll get into politics in a little bit.
Right, that's how I got to meet the Binion family.
Yeah, you and we had some great Binion stories, I know.
Oh, Binion. It's still in the news occasionally.
Well, you know, those days in Las Vegas were somewhat like those days in radio and television back in the 60s.
Absolutely.
It was character-driven, personality-driven, and there were a lot of characters around.
A lot of characters. And, you know, the golden age of TV in Tulsa is so different. And I think a lot of people make the mistake of saying, well, this happened, you know, before I can remember, and I'm not interested in what happened at Channel 2 or Channel 6 or Channel 8 in Tulsa or any other station back in the 60s or 70s. But they really are missing a slice of life that'll never be repeated.
Well, yeah, this book is very interesting, How High Can a Guy Stoop? And I want to talk to you about the title in a moment. Because you really deal with the life behind the scenes.
Right.
And you tell a lot.
I know. I hope I haven't told too much.
Are you in trouble yet?
Not yet.
No one's called you up and said, Miller, why did you tell that story?
No, not yet. But that probably will happen. I did run portions of it by some attorneys, and they studied it, and then they didn't have a clue on whether I'd get sued or not.
Yeah, right.
So anything can happen.
Well, I doubt.
I tried to leave out names where I might hurt somebody. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't want to hurt anybody, but I think the.
Yeah, you left out the one name I was looking for, and that was the porno movie incident.
Oh, right. Well, now there's a good example of the golden age of television. I doubt, seriously, I don't know for sure, but I doubt that a lot of people today working in television produce porno movies in their spare time using station equipment and sometimes other employees. But, yeah, that was one of the parts that ran by an attorney. I was afraid to use the call letters of the station involved. Because I thought maybe...
Because they would narrow it down.
Well, yeah, they might say, well, you're damaging our reputation. Even though the station's changed hands, ownership, and everything, nobody there anymore. The lawyers didn't have a clue whether I could or not.
Well, I don't either.
But, you know, in those days, you got away with what you could get away with. And I remember my boss at one station said, actually told us at a staff meeting, you know, get away with whatever you want. But be prepared to pay the consequences if you get caught.
You worked in Tulsa Television, Tulsa Radio originally, grew up in Tulsa. Your dad was in show business.
Absolutely. He ran a dance studio for years on East 15th Street. It was called kind of Dancing School Row, about four or five dancing schools, ballet and all that, in one little area of Tulsa. And now... He also was a theatrical booking agent, and he booked acts and was affiliated with AGVA, AGVA.
The Variety
Union. Yeah, and he, during World War II, my dad, Lou Miller, formed an organization called Hey Rube that performed, entertained the troops at Chaffee and Gruber here. Muskogee area, and then other camps eventually in Louisiana and other states. One of his participants was a singer named Patty Page, who worked for $5 a show in those days.
$5 a show. Yeah, and we've had Patty on the air, and she's still working.
Yeah, she has a website. I've seen her website.
And she has a brand of syrup she sells.
Is that right?
Yeah, Patty Page syrup, because she lives up in the Northeast now.
New Hampshire. Anyway, here's Patty Page. We'll be back with Mike Miller in a moment. Patty Page, one of my favorite songs from the 50s, called All My Love.
I give you all my love. The skies may fall, my love, but I will still be true. All my sighs will disappear at last. Now that you're here at last, my heart belongs to you. Never let me go. You thrill me so, I can see as I recall my life. I've waited all my life to give you all my love. I caballero and tip your sombrero to your señorita, the lovely Chiquita, waiting so long for you and your song. While you are playing, her heart will be swaying. She will surrender her kisses so tender to you. She will flee the moment that you sing, "Oh, my love, I give you all my love. The skies may fall, my love, but I will still be true. All my sighs will disappear at last, now that you're here at last. My heart belongs to you. Oh, never let me go. You thrill me so, I can see, as I recall my life. I've waited all my life to give you all my love.
Very talented person. You know, we did some shows about those old Camp Gruber days back in World War II on our Memories program. And it's amazing how many people came through that camp, Camp Gruber.
Oh, yeah.
And now, when we talk about your dad and his career, he originally worked in New York on Broadway.
That's right. He was an acrobatic dancer in vaudeville. And I think he hurt his back doing one of these somersaults or whatever, and ended up having to teach dancing. And that's he moved to Oklahoma City. He saw an ad in the paper in New York that a woman named Catherine Duffy was looking for a dance instructor, willing to move to Oklahoma City. So he took the job. And then my mother grew up in Staten Island, New York.
Well, when I read your book. Your dad had played vaudeville in Amarillo and Tulsa and places like that, so I assumed he just liked it here, but that wasn't the case.
No, he ended up just taking this job there, and he met my mother, who had enrolled in his class. And my mother also had a little interesting background. Her parent died during the big influenza epidemic, uh-huh. You know, and in, what is it, 1918 or something like that? And she ended up in an orphanage in Kansas, a Catholic convent, and had actually became a nun and left right before she was scheduled to take her final vows. And so my father was Jewish and my mother was Catholic.
But she later converted him.
She converted him over, yeah.
And we may get into that story. You had polio when you were young.
That's right. When I was nine, my mother was really responsible for me walking again, because she had left the church to marry my dad, who had been divorced. And I was in Hillcrest Medical Center, and the doctor said I'd never walk again. I was 9 years old. And she decided to fly up to Chicago and to some shrine that she had a special interest in, and made a pledge to the Lord that if I would walk again, she would come back to the church, even if it meant leaving my dad. And when he went to pick her up at the airport, when she came back, he informed her that the doctors had just informed him that I'd walked up and down on my bed,
mm-hmm.
And then they rushed to the hospital, and I did an encore for them.
Yeah, you had an interesting story about driving all the way to Santa Monica to the beach.
Muscle Beach,
and that was a long trip back in those days.
Oh, it took 4 days.
Old
66.
But when you got on 66 from Albuquerque west, you did saw nothing.
Nothing. I mean, nothing. You just drove and drove and drove, and a lot of part of, you know, of the desert part of the trip, you had to drive at night because we didn't have air-conditioned cars in those days.
Yeah, so the roads were busy at night.
Oh, yeah.
In the 60s, this was a hit TV show.
and a top five record. Heck, number one in many places. Nelson Riddle, Route 66.
Talk about tap dancing. We can't get past this without mentioning that Bob Lozier, who a lot of people know regardless of where they live due to his anchoring at CNN Headline News for a long time. In fact, Lozier wrote his own book.
That's right. 5 Seconds to Air, I believe it was called. Mm-hmm. And Bob and I are good friends. He was one of my pupils when I was teaching dancing part-time to pay for my way through TU, University of Tulsa. I taught myself to play a few tunes on the piano, so I was teaching and playing piano, accompanying at the same time. And I think there were must have been fifth and sixth grader, you know, in that age bracket, and Lozier was one of them. He reminded me of it later. But, he had quite an experience himself, I guess, over at CNN Headline News. And he got, became a victim of office politics.
Yeah, well, that happens. This business is rife with that, unfortunately. But a lot of places are, a lot of different fields. We'll get into some of the other names that people know about, because I want to discuss not only your Tulsa career, but, you got some pretty interesting stories about when you went to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it was a real education for me. I was in Little Rock at the time, and I had been news director of Channel 11 and Channel 7 earlier than that, and I'd gotten fired from both of those stations. It wasn't my fault. At Channel 7, the news director who had been there before had left to go to work for a congressman, and he'd made a deal with Jimmy Lake, the owner of the station, that if he didn't like it, didn't work out, he could come back. They never told me that, so he didn't like it and came back, and I was out of a job.
Well, yeah, we've had Jimmy Lake on the air before he passed away, and you actually speak very glowingly of Jimmy Lake most of the time, other than we all know he liked to watch the pennies and he loved his antique cars.
Yes, he did. Most of the money, I think, that he had went into the cars rather than the TV stations. But no, he was always very nice to me, and I always liked Jimmy Lake. But anyway, to get back to the political thing, I decided after going through these jobs and being fired for no reason at all.
Now the news director, especially back in those days, and probably still the same way, they. That's kind of like a fighter pilot. That's a job that had a high attrition rate. They had to blame somebody,
right.
And so usually they just bring in a new news director.
Yeah, I think it's. I always kind of visualized it like it's like a football coach or a baseball manager.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't fire the players, so they get rid of the manager.
Yeah.
To make, you know, usually ratings, so much of the ratings are due to lead-ins. You know, what's the program that's on right before the news or after the news. And I remember the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson used to be the big draw. And so if you were on an NBC affiliate right before he came on, a lot of people would tune in early. And just
well, yeah, that worked on almost every market except Channel 2.
Yes.
In Tulsa.
Channel 2 was...
It usually was always third.
Always third. But I decided at one point just to get out of the news business and get into something more stable like politics.
Actually, let me make up the Channel 2. They had a great show on Saturday nights called Fantastic Theater.
He got good ratings.
Jimmy Lake, he had a car show in conjunction with the 57 Plymouth Time Capsule. There's a big car show going on. And on Saturday night, they have a sock hop. And one of the entertainers will be Bobby V.
They say that you're a runaround lover, though you say it isn't so. But if you put me down for another, I'll know, believe me, I'll know. 'Cause a night has a thousand eyes, and a thousand eyes can't help but see if you are true to me. So remember when you tell those little white lies that the night has a thousand eyes. You say that you're at home when you phone me, and how much you really care. Though you keep telling me that you're lonely, I'll know if someone is there. 'Cause the night has a thousand eyes, and a thousand eyes can't help but see if you are true to me. So remember when you tell those little white lies that the night has a thousand eyes. One of these days you're gonna be sorry, 'cause your game I'm gonna play. And you find out without really trying, each time that my kiss is astray. 'Cause a night has a thousand eyes, and a thousand eyes will see me through. And no matter what I do, I could never disguise all my little white lies. 'Cause a night has a thousand eyes. So remember when you tell those little white lies, has a thousand eyes.
Bobby V and the Night Had a Thousand Eyes, and of course that was true for you, Mike Miller, when you were on television in Tulsa doing the nightly anchor job. Big doings in Tulsa with the Tulsa Time Capsule with 1970 Plymouth Belvedere. Bobby V will be at the sock hop on Saturday night, along with the Shirelles and other acts like Fabian. This ends our first half hour with Mike Miller as we have been reminiscing about the 50s and 60s. I would like to take this opportunity to talk to you about a vacation idea for this summer, or really any time, that is unique, different, and affordable. I'm talking about a tour of the Grand Canyon in a van with Marvelous Marv, the world-famous tour guide. Marvelous Marv has lived in the Grand Canyon area for well over two decades, and he will show you things that no other tour guide will, and all the while fill you in on the history and the mystery of the Giant Canyon itself. When you go on a tour with Marv, you get to see the best viewpoints and the best exhibits. He knows this canyon. He knows this area of Arizona. Now, on this page, there's a banner you can click on, and it will take you to Marv's website, where you can get all the answers about Marv and his Grand Canyon tour. This is a vacation you will treasure forever. Check it out, won't you? Marvelous Marv's Grand Canyon Tours.
Here's an all-American big hit, ready to rock it.
There's no sound like its sound. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm your DJ.
In the 50s, 60s, and even into the 70s, we used to have all kinds of strange little intros like that for our disc jockey shows. Hello, I'm Jerry Pippin, and welcome back to our second half hour of our special on the 1957 Plymouth Time Capsule. We are doing this show on the occasion of the unearthing on June 15th of the Plymouth Belvedere. It's a time capsule that was buried in downtown Tulsa, June 15th, 1957. We have some video of the event here on this page. You might want to check it out sometime. The Plymouth that was in the vault is being featured at the Tulsa Car Show all weekend. The Tulsa Car Show runs until 3 o'clock on June 17th, Father's Day. The Saturday night sock hop on the 16th is interesting. They have Fabian, Bobby V, and this group, the Chiffons. They're playing here in Tulsa and then straight to Branson for at least a month. Oldies rock and roll fans, it is indeed one fine day. Hey, that sounds like a song cue. Here they are, the Chiffons.
The Chiffons, along with Bobby V and also Fabian, together on stage in Tulsa on Saturday night, then for the rest of June and July at Branson, Missouri. As we're producing this segment on June 15th, we just received word that Mr. Wizard Don Herbert has passed away. Mr. Wizard did his first show in 1951, by the way. He was most famous for his science-based kiddie shows in the 60s. Another guy who was famous in the 60s for being on television is our guest Mike Miller, especially in Little Rock and Tulsa. We'll get back to Tulsa and the time capsule story in a minute, Mike, but we need to find out a little bit more about how you ended up in the nation's capital on television with famous people like Connie Chung.
No, I actually took a job. There was a guy... I wanted. I've always been intrigued with politics, And I'd see politicians, and I admired some of them, not very many of them, but some of them. And I knew a few of them that worked on their staffs, and I always wondered what it would be like to work for a congressman or a senator. And so there was a guy running for Congress in the 2nd District, which is Little Rock in the central part of Arkansas, heavily Democratic area, the old Wilbur Mills seat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was open, an open seat. And this guy said, I want you to meet Ed Bethune. He's running for Congress there. And so he needs a press guy, somebody who's good at TV, help him. So I met him, and we hit it off right away. And I had also talked to Bill Clinton, who was the Attorney General at the time. And we had drinks one night, and he wanted a number of people on his staff who with a background in radio and television. So it was obvious he was going to be the next governor. He had token opposition. But he didn't need anybody right then and there, because this was in the summer. He wouldn't need anybody till January. And so I asked Clinton, I said, I got a chance to go to work for Ed Bethune, but he's a Republican. And Clinton said, well, I know Ed, he's a good guy, and he may win that race, he's sharp. And we did, we pulled it off. Mm-hmm. When I went to work for Bethune, he was 56 points behind in the polls, if you can imagine.
Wow.
And we pulled it off with some really wild things.
So you, Mike Miller, in political consultancy history, is kind of a miracle man. At least that helped you get another job, I imagine. You can play off of that to something else.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, an interesting thing on that race, you know, there was one thing that really won it. We were lagging toward the end of the race. Mary, my wife, was working for Bethune also at minimal wages, but it was so much fun. It was our first venture into politics, and it was very exciting. It really was. It was unbelievably exciting. But I had always from radio days, I always had my tape recorder with me, and I would tape Bethune when he was making a speech and lift out, you know, what they call actualities.
Sure.
And feed the radio stations, and radio was very good about taking, if they didn't have to lift a finger and they got a news story out of it, they would run it.
You and I both have been in that boat.
Yeah.
Hey, well, we'll use this. Why not?
And our opponent was a guy named Doug Brandon, who owned furniture stores in Little Rock, but he was so far out ahead of us in the polls, he didn't want to even acknowledge Ed Bethune, so he declined an invitation to debate.
Mm-hmm.
So he wouldn't debate us, but they would show up at joint appearances, and one would speak and leave, and then the other one, you know, and I'd leave my tape recorder going. And I, to make a long story short, I ended up with a tape recorder full of our opponent's voice. And then I started listening to them, and he was flip-flopping on issues. He was tailoring his remarks depending
on different places, different crowds.
Exactly. I mean, he'd be for something and against it somewhere else. So we ended up, he was asked that question at one of these functions after Bethune had left. And I guess he was trying to get a little dig in that Bethune didn't want to stick around and answer questions. And he said, in a debate, you don't want to debate, because in a debate you'd have to explain all these issues, and if you explain enough issues, he said, I'd make you mad and you wouldn't vote for me. He slipped into the first person. He said, I'd make you mad and you wouldn't vote for me. So we ended up, I said, bingo, on the way home, back to the office. I kept playing this excerpt of our opponent saying, if I were to answer enough questions, you wouldn't vote for me. I'd make you mad, you know. And so he was, you know, trying to pontificate, but by slipping into the first person, it was devastating. We used a radio commercial on that and blew him out of the water in the last 2 weeks of the campaign.
We'll get some more politics here in a moment. Let's talk a little bit more about your days behind the scenes in broadcasting. When you went to Washington, you worked with a lot of people. Bob Cheaper, CBS, Connie Chung. Yeah, Connie Chung and you had a thing going, kind of.
Well,
she liked you.
In my dream. Connie, we were at Channel 5 WTTG in Washington is an independent station owned by Metro Media. And they had quite a good news staff of people. Bob Schieffer and I went to work there the same day. And Connie walked in one day looking for her first job. She's fresh out of the University of Maryland. You could imagine what she looked like. She was just a knockout, you know, as a young woman. And she's still pretty attractive. But she walked in, and the news director, Mike Buchanan, stood up and he said, "I don't know who you are or what you can do, but you're hired."
Now Buchanan was a real character, kind of Luke Grant type, but probably worse than that.
He was insane. He came from Oklahoma City, Channel 9.
Uh-huh, that explains it.
That probably has something to do with it. But every afternoon, he would organize a hockey game in the newsroom. It was carpeted. And there was a golf bag in there, and everybody got golf balls out, and we would play hockey with the golf balls and the golf sticks. And, I mean, it got pretty furious. It was, people would be trying to type, and a golf ball would whiz by their head. And so after a few minor injuries, we switched to a film can, the core, you know, the little plastic core in the middle of the film, and at least people weren't taken to the hospital. But the big boss came through one day in the middle of the hockey game, showing off the station to some clients, and he really gave us a dirty look. I don't know how he explained that, but he would also he loved to do practical jokes. He would jump out of a car. When he was a reporter, he was with the station before he became news director. The cameraman told me that they would be driving down K Street, and all of a sudden Mike would jump out of the car, run into a building.
Heavy traffic, I bet he beat them out of the building by the time they got down.
Block the away, car. They'd see Mike, you know, thumbing a ride. He would run down the
hill. Well, that's probably, as you found later when you were a news director, that's probably a good release. You probably need something like that.
Oh, it kept everybody real loose. And in fact, when I became a news director after that, I tried to emulate Mike Buchanan, not to that extreme, but the ways that he always kept the staff relaxed.
We're going to get back to the Tulsa TV scene in the 50s and 60s with Mike Miller, broadcasting from Shadowwood Mall. You probably can hear the people moving around in the background. Muskogee's just south of Tulsa. We're in a bedroom community. Oh, the chamber hates to hear things like that. We'll be back. Don't go away.
Hello, this is Farah Yurduzi. Maybe you have questions about love, your job, your health, money and more. With my psychic gifts and my tarot readings, we can reveal the solutions to your deepest mysteries. Please visit me through Jerry Pippin Radio and let's find the answers together.
Click on Farah's banner for the answers to the most personal question.
Take good care of my baby. Now don't you ever make her cry. Just let your love surround her. Paint a rainbow all around her.
In honor of the 50-year-old Tulsa time capsule being opened in downtown Tulsa, Bobby V, Fabian, and the Chiffons are appearing in an old-fashioned sock hop on Saturday night.
He's a soft-spoken guy. Also seems kind of shy. Makes me wonder if I'd even give him a try. But then again, he gets shy. He gets shy away forever. And I'm gonna make him mine. If it takes me forever.
Friday night, they opened up the Belvedere, and guess what? When they unwrapped the plastic, it was full of water. Rusted 50-year-old water. But I think they salvaged some things. We'll talk about that later in the show. Right now, let's talk to Mike Miller again, and let's talk about 60s television. And in Tulsa,
and even in Little Rock, really, because I think they were from there originally. The Pitcock brothers were pretty popular.
Bob Gregory, who's Bob Pitcock, is his real name, but he gave me my first job in radio at KTUL Radio. And I walked in and I saw him, met him for the first time. I thought, this guy looks a little bit like Gregory Peck.
Mm-hmm.
And so it didn't surprise me that his on-air name was Bob Gregory. Yeah. He had the deepest voice.
Yes, he did.
I have ever heard in my life.
Now, you became very good friends with Gregory. Gregory was responsible for you coming back to Tulsa. Right?
Yes, when I was at Channel 5 in about the second year, the unions went on strike. And I had a lot of bad experiences with the unions clashing. We had a non-strike clause in our union contract, so we couldn't honor the picket lines, and there was a lot of resentment. So he called, and he said, how would you like to come back to Channel, or come to Tulsa at Channel 8 and be news director? He was vice president of news, and Jimmy Lake had talked him into leaving CBS News, and where he had been working, and coming there as vice president of news, and doing these specials. He did a series, Oil in Oklahoma and the Five Civilized Tribes, and was doing just monthly specials. Bob was a little eccentric, and we used to call him Alistair Cook. You remember Alistair Cook was doing those same kind of specials at the time? But he became a great friend, and
You went to his wedding.
I was in his wedding, got drunk.
And then went down to Channel 2 and did the news.
Yeah, I looked in the mirror about 4 o'clock. I said, God, I've got to do the news, and I'm drunk. And I've been drinking champagne, and I don't know if you've ever gotten drunk on champagne, but it can creep up on you pretty quick. And that was horrible. I had to go home, drive back to the station and put together a whole newscast, and... those were in my drinking days. I quit drinking.
Well, in fact, that's one of the good things about this book, I think, is you delve into not only these incidents, but you also talk about your bouts with the problem of drinking.
That's right. And, drinking was so much a part of radio and television in the late 50s and 60s.
It certainly was. And you talk about every night when you got off the air, you go... drink, and what would you do? You'd listen to tapes.
Yeah. We had a club. When I started out at KTO Radio, I was a night DJ, but did the news, too, you know, rip and read and all that, and make calls, check.
Great stories in there, by the way, Mike, about the rip and read days. I could identify with AP and UPI, and they'd have the mistakes, and... You tell a story about a guy on Mutual broadcasting and reading the same article, and there was a screw-up.
I didn't realize. I knew we ripped it and read it cold, but I didn't realize the networks were doing it, too. This is early Sunday morning, and I would monitor the Mutual radio network for actualities that I could lift out, President Eisenhower or whoever was president at the time, and lifting. He's reading the same words verbatim, and I look ahead a little bit, and it's all garbled. And I said, well, I hope he's not just reading this cold. But he reached that and just stumbled all over the place. Couldn't figure out what to say next. And I thought to myself, gee, preparation is a good thing.
Yeah. Now, back to the four disc jockeys on the air in Tulsa at the same time at night.
Yeah, we formed a club, a drinking club. All of the night disc jockeys, when we signed off, we would go down to KRMG. Larry Strain was the disc jockey there.
Yeah, he's an Arkansas guy. You know, he's in Hot Springs.
Yeah, great guy. A great voice.
And yes, he was. He used to do that music till midnight.
Yeah, and he was kind of one of the ones that got me into broadcasting. I loved to listen to him. Anyway, we would all go down there and get in the main studio. There'd be maybe five or six disc jockeys and their friends, hangers-on. I mean, Jim Hartz had come down there and a few others. And we would record, get the recorder, just hit the record button and sit in there and drink and tell jokes and just have a ball. And then after about an hour, we'd play back the recording to see how stupid we sounded. A crowning achievement, Jerry, was one night we decided on all the stations at precisely the same time to play this terrible record.
You don't remember the name of the song?
I don't remember. It was so forgettable.
Okay.
It was a kind of record that...
That was the first assignment I told Roberta, who you met, produces a show. I said, find that song. She said, well, he doesn't name it.
I wish I could remember the song, but it was just, you know, every week or two, you'd get all these new records coming out, and 45s, I think. And it was just the worst thing. Horrible, horrible, horrible.
Oh,
and we all agreed immediately, let's all play that at the same time on all the stations. And so we thought that'd be neat. Somebody driving down the street, switching stations. And, you know, you wouldn't want to listen to that song very long, so you'd switch stations.
Yeah, and
it's there again, and there. It's another
one. We're talking about back in the days when 4 or 5 a.m. signals were about all you could get.
That's right. Before the FM, you know, got really popular. I think they had KWGS out at the University of Tulsa, and that was about it.
And so the people were held captive in their cars. And I can see them hitting KRMG, KAKC, KTUL.
KOME. And I was listening to KAKC, so I was kind of, I wanted to make sure I started my record precisely when KAKC started his, and he was listening to another station.
No, it was Scooter Seagraves.
Scooter Seagraves, who's a legend, I guess. He not only started the record, but after about 10 seconds, he said, this record is gaining in popularity. Switch around. You'll hear it on almost any station.
It sounds like Scooter.
Yeah. So he was encouraging people to do that. I imagine there were a few cars that may have left the highway.
It's interesting. It was competitive back in those days, but most of us were friends with everyone.
Everybody, yeah. Really. You go on, even in TV later, you'd go out on a story, and maybe your competition had a camera malfunction or... they ran out of film, and you'd shoot it for them, or they'd shoot it for you if you were in trouble.
Now you have an interesting story about your days in Washington, D.C., where the union guys stood in front of your camera. You couldn't get the film, and somehow you made the competition give you the film.
That's right. there was a hijacking of a jetliner out of Dulles Airport, and the station was on strike, so we had to shoot our own film. Our camera crews, sound men, electrician, were all on strike. So a producer and I jumped in a car and drove out to Dulles, and we couldn't see the plane. It was parked at one end of the runway, so we climbed over the fence and made our way, trying to make our way to the runway. And after about 15 minutes of going through the woods, instead of the runway, there's our car. We had walked around in a big circle, not realizing it. So we took right angles, and the next time, in about another 10 minutes, there's the runway, and the plane is taking off as we approach the runway, and it's just maybe 100 feet in front of us. It's spectacular footage. I shot it, this plane lifting off. And that night, the pilot and the FBI had a big news conference out at Dulles, and we were all set up shooting it, and the different network photographers or soundmen would take turns standing in front of our lens, blocking our view.
Because you guys were strike breaks.
Because we were, and then one of my best friends who had worked with me at Channel 5 had gone over to CBS, a guy named Bob Peterson, later shot for 60 Minutes, terrific photographer. He cut our cable. He just got out some scissors and cut our power cord just to the camera, so we were powerless. And it was very disappointing to go back to the station with no story. The first time in my life it had ever happened. Mike Buchanan, the news director, was furious, and he called CBS News and complained about it, and they actually apologized, sent us Bob Peterson's own film, so we used the film of the guy who cut our cable.
That is, I'm surprised you had enough nerve to try to shoot another airplane incident with your camera, because that was your first assignment, I think, in television.
Oh, that was an interesting story. The news director was a guy named Austin Schneider, and he was a very big, big, heavyset guy, and he had a terrible temper, which I found out on the very first day when I had just arrived at the station. I didn't know anything about shooting film. I've just been in radio. Right. And I mean, all of a sudden now I had to learn how to shoot film and wear makeup and all that stuff. Television was all new to me. And so there was a plane crash out at the airport. A plane had belly landed. And Austin gave me a Bell and Howell camera. It was a little... They're very rugged cameras. And he said, set it on, I don't know, 11, F11 or something. And he said, is this wide angle? Everything should be in focus. Go out and shoot it. So I went out there and I shot it. And it came back. And the film was beautifully exposed. I thought, terrific. And he took it and just threw it across the room and kicked a desk drawer and just shattered. And he didn't like my film because it happened to be upside down. No one had shown me the top from the bottom. And so it was beautifully exposed, but it was upside down, so it wasn't usable. And I thought that was being a little tacky.
Yeah, right. But evidently you rose on up the ladder there at Channel 2.
It was a good place to learn. Yeah, a good place to learn because...
You had to do everything.
Had to do everything. Had to process your own film, and that was kind of interesting because it was a huge machine, and... Sometimes the film, once it got processed, would go through what they call the dry box, and where it was heated and all that. And it would break sometimes in there. And when it broke, you were really in trouble. I mean, especially if the newscast was within 20 minutes. And all that, things you have to do before it gets on the air. And, you know, sometimes we would run down the halls of Channel 2 with this long trailing edge.
Yeah, the projectors, the film chains, if I remember back in those days, I worked in TV too. They were usually far away from the control room for some reason. Yeah, I guess because of the noise.
It could have been. Yeah, you're right. They weren't right there close by. But we'd just try to dry it quickly. Sometimes we'd run with it, and Harold Stewart, the owner of the station, would be... Like the guy up in Channel 5, he'd be bringing clients through, and there's some of his personnel running down the hallway with film trailing behind them, you know, half a...
You mentioned Harold Stewart, made his money in the oil business. You talk about Jimmy Lake, made his money with Griffin Grocery Company. And it really kind of ties in like the early icons in Las Vegas, because... In today's corporate world, I don't think you see the CEO running down the halls of the TV stations, talking to the newsmen, kibitzing with the salespeople. But back in those days, they were kind of hands-on.
Pretty close. I know in the case of Channel 8 and Jimmy Lake, he, of course, lived in Muskogee, and he watched Channel 8 like a hawk.
Taping the show in Muskogee today. Right. And I think he probably even called you down to some meetings at his office. I don't know.
Yeah, a few times. The embarrassing thing that ever happened to me, I was anchoring the news, and, of course, he had his annual antique show.
Yeah.
And that was a big thing.
Big, of course.
And we always nicknamed Jimmy Lake the Chief. He was the Chief.
Mm-hmm. And he liked it.
And he liked it.
Yeah, right.
We didn't call him the Chief too much to his face, but we did. And in fact, we had little bumpers into the commercials, a little bumper card promoting the next story that's coming up. And, of course, we'd get memos from time to time from Jimmy Lake suggesting maybe we'd like to cover something from one of his friends or a client or something. And I remember one time when I was news director, we designed one. It just said, for the Chief. but this night I was anchoring the news, and we had saved the last 4 minutes of the newscast to give this great in-depth story on his antique auto show out at the fairgrounds. And during the commercial, I promoted it, you know, we'll be back with the big antique auto show. And about that time, the director calls down on the intercom and he says, Mike, we can't find the film for that story.
Oh.
And I said, what? No, you're kidding. Lake had retired after the show with all his buddies, had gone to his house to watch.
Waiting to see
of course, they're going to watch Channel 8.
Right.
And here I have to come back and say there wasn't time, you know, to launch a search party, and I had to apologize at technical difficulties, of course, prevented us from presenting this, and that was very embarrassing. And two people got fired: the photographer who edited the piece but forgot to bring it up to the projectionist, and the projectionist who never bothered to ask for it. We're both there in the unemployment line the next day.
Well, we'll be back in a moment with Mike Miller. In the next half hour, we're going to have an Elvis story. Can't do something about the 50s and 60s without an Elvis story. In the background, Nelson Riddle and Lisbon Antigua. Not all the music in the 50s and 60s was rock and roll. This is Jerry Pippin, and this is our special on the Tulsa Time Machine. It happened almost 60 years ago, but the debate still rages. Did an alien spacecraft crash outside Roswell, New Mexico in 1947? The most concise and complete series ever broadcast on Roswell, direct from Roswell. New programs added weekly. Check it out on the UFO Files on JerryPippin.com.
It looks like it's about 8 or 10 miles
west.
Good timer.
Jerry Pippin, it's number one.
Well, we do have the number one song in 1957 coming up here in a minute, so stay tuned. Welcome back to our special built around the Tulsa Time Capsule. By now, you know, the Plymouth came out very rusted, but it still had a little chrome that was shiny. It was buried June 15, 1957, and unearthed 50 years later this weekend. Let's take a look at what was happening in the news that week. Back in 1957, the trial of James R. Hoffa, the powerful Midwest Teamster boss, was underway, and the move for integration was moving forward ever so slowly, even back in 1957. Southern blocks of congressmen succeeded in blocking jury trials for civil rights violators. It would be several years yet before any meaningful civil rights laws would be passed by the federal government. At Radio City Music Hall, Marilyn Monroe and Laurence Olivier were starring in The Prince and the Showgirl. Number one on the charts that year from Billboard magazine was a song by Pat Boone, Love Letters in the Sand. That's right. It was a battle for the hearts and minds of America between Elvis Presley and Pat Boone in 1957, and it's hard to believe, but Mr. Clean Cut was the winner as far as the top 100 singles. At least he had the number one position. You think the thing was fixed? Elvis fans, never fear. We have a great Elvis story coming up here in a moment when we return to our guest Mike Miller. But first, let's give Mr. Boone and his white buckskins their dues. Here he is with the number one song of 1957.
On a day like today, we pass the time away, writing love letters in the sand. Take our love letters from the sand. You made a vow that you would ever be true, but somehow
thank you.
Mike Miller is our guest. We're chatting with Maul and Muskogee, where we're talking with Mike Miller about the 50s and 60s and television and radio, especially centered around Tulsa. We just played Pat Boone. Mike, you actually met Elvis Presley, didn't you? In person.
Yeah,
in
we
Vegas.
Had a friend of mine
at the Sahara
from Tulsa that I had gone to school with, named Gary King, and I had gone out, I quit my job at K2O Radio, and I guess you read this and How High Can a Guy Stoop, but we got out after drinking around Vegas, different places. We stopped in at the Sahara Casino, and I looked out of my corner of my eye, and I see Elvis was sitting at a roulette table, and he was surrounded by bodyguards, and his nice knockout, blonde. And I was just drunk enough to go up and introduce myself as a disc jockey from Tulsa. Play your records all the time, Elvis, which was a lie because
you were a good music station.
We were a good music station. KKC.
Right.
He was on KKC, our competitors.
Yeah.
But he was gracious, polite. He introduced me to his date, Juliet Prowse, and I guess they were dating a little bit then. And in fact, I think they were appearing in a movie together.
And Juliet was very friendly to you.
She was very good. I told her I taught dancing, and she was
open type blouse. So
freckles. Saw the couple of mound of freckles there. Being very careful that Elvis didn't see me seeing mound of freckles. But after about 5 minutes of chit chat, we decided to not overstay our welcome. And
well, that's probably considerate of you.
Yeah, but you know it. Remarkable. At the time, you don't think that's such a big deal, but he was a big star. But he's become even bigger. I think today you got to say he's probably the biggest.
Our Elvis section on our website rivals anything else we do consistently. Always more visitors, more hits. Always at the top.
Yeah, you don't realize that what a historical meeting you're meeting this
guy.
Okay,
Mike, we're gonna make you 50 years later a truth teller. Now we're going to play Elvis Presley right here. Mike Miller introducing. You don't want to do it? Okay, I will. Elvis Presley, one of the big songs of 57. I want you to be my teddy bear.
Oh, baby, let me be your love teddy bear. Pull a chain around my neck and lead me anywhere. Let me be your teddy bear. I don't want to be a tiger, cause tigers play too rough. I don't want to be a lion, cause lions ain't the kind you love enough. But I just want to be your teddy bear. Put a chain around my neck and leave me anywhere. Oh, let me be your teddy bear. Baby, let me be around you every night. Run your fingers through my hair and cuddle me real tight. Oh, let me be,
oh, let him be
your teddy bear. I don't want to be a tiger, cause tigers play too rough. I don't want to be a lion, cause lions ain't the kind you love enough. I just want to be your teddy bear. Put a chain around my neck and leave me anywhere. Oh, let me be,
oh, let him be.
Oh, teddy bear. Oh, let me be.
Oh, let him be your teddy bear.
I just want to be your.
Well, there you've heard it. Mike Miller and Elvis Presley, pals. Shared the same girlfriend, almost. Actually, Mike Miller, you've met some pretty terrific people, some big stars over the years. One of the things in the book, How High Can a Guy Stoop, your autobiography of sorts, you talk about your encounter with Bob Hope.
Bob Hope was terrific. I found that when you're in the news business, you interview a lot of celebrities, but it seems like the bigger they are,
the nicer
they are. And if they're not quite that big, they're not very nice.
No, they're not. This is my theory on that, because I've been in the same situation you have. The middle guys, they really want to block anybody from getting close to them because they're trying to go to the top. The big guys, they know they're okay, so they don't have to worry about it. So they're open to talking to everybody.
Yeah.
And then the middle tier people, the people I try to steer away from.
Oh, my image and all this stuff, and they're so taken with themselves.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
I interviewed him for 15 minutes.
And
I woke.
Didn't work, right?
Yeah, after waking him up,
yeah,
somebody tipped me off. He was at the Mayo Hotel in Tulsa, and I called and woke him up about three times before he said, "Come up, you're not going to give up, are you?" And I set up the tape recorder, and 15 minutes later, I checked it, and for some reason, it didn't record. And I thought, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I woke him up three times and then recorded him, and it didn't record.
And
he was so gracious, he said, just back it up, let's do it again.
Yeah.
And he was great.
You had to deal with Phyllis Diller, who is one of my favorite people.
I've got a great Phyllis Diller story in the book, How High Can a Guy Stoop? I've got to get that in there every once in a while. Phyllis, I was at Channel 6 in Tulsa, and I decided to play a little practical joke on the anchor man, who was Clayton Vaughn at the time.
And originally Clayton had been over KAKC, and you were KQL Radio.
Right.
In fact, we even worked for Clayton at one time.
At one time, yeah, at KAKC.
Radio.
Yeah. And so I asked, after we did the interview, I said to Phyllis, I said, why don't we pull a gag on our anchor man, and I'll ask you, you've been in Tulsa, and this is the way I did it. I said, and she went for it. She said, oh, this is great, I'll do it.
Yeah.
She said, I said, you've been in Tulsa just a short time, but what do you think of Clayton Vaughn? And Phyllis started that patented billowing laughter that she has, you know, oh, Clayton Vaughn, and she,
yeah,
you know, just howling and laughing so hard she fell off the couch. And then right then, we didn't tell Clayton that we were going to do this. And it came up back to Clayton on set, and he was staring at the monitor. And, you know, I was sore from just laughing at Phyllis, but Clayton was just plain sore. He didn't appreciate it at all. But everybody else did. So.
Well, that's what made it funny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those days, you don't see that sort of thing happening anymore. I mean, those are part of the golden days.
It's certainly true. You've interviewed everybody. We mentioned Bob Hope, a lot of politicians, even Mother Teresa.
Mother Teresa was wild, because we went out to the Tulsa International Airport. We tipped that she was arriving out there, and sure enough, there's no one there. Some priests and nuns, a couple of them. And she steps off the plane, and I ask her if could I interview her, and she was very gracious. She says, sure. And there was something about her. She was radiating this warmth, goodness. I mean, it's like you're interviewing a living saint.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost intimidated me to the point where I didn't, you know, get tongue-tied. But she had a great sense of humor. She was actually very funny. And just one of the most memorable interviews.
We're going to do another hour later, because you'll be coming back.
I hope so.
And you're going to have some book signings and some things like that in the future. But we have to touch on politics just briefly here.
Sure.
Tell me the Chick Heck story. Now, you worked for him a long time.
Right.
He's Senator, Republican from Nevada. By all accounts, pretty nice fellow.
Great guy. He was so non-political. He was an admirer of Ronald Reagan, and he was heavily influenced by Paul Laxalt. Senator Laxalt had been the governor and then was senator. They'd both Chick had been in the legislature and had grown very close to the governor, Laxalt, and they had been very close. So when Chick was the senatorial committee sent me out there in that race, and then when Chick won, he asked me to be his communications director, his press secretary, and so I served with him not only in the campaign, but his whole 6-year term. But one funny story about Chick, the White House was going to send Reagan out 2 days before the election to help boost Chick's campaign, and the media just hated Chick.
They did.
Oh, well, they just ignored him. They didn't think he had a chance against Senator Howard Cannon, the incumbent, and so they just ignored him. And so the White House, they said to Chick, you're only going to introduce the president. You're going to stand up there and at the rally and say, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States. That's it. Nothing more. Don't say anything more. Well, I said, Chick, the press is ignoring you now. If you do something like that and don't say anything,
right,
they're going to really have an excuse to ignore you. And first impressions in politics are so important. So I banged out a little speech for him, about a 45-second speech, thanking Reagan for coming to Las Vegas and giving tourism a boost because he was going to spend the night there at the Sands. And so we had this nice little speech, and his political consultant, he had said, yeah, this is great. You got to speak, Chick. You can't just go up there and say, introduce the president. So he was going to give him some boots, some tuxedo boots from the store he owned at Western Emporium. And he said, bring these boots to me right before the program begins. And I said, Chick, I don't think that's a good idea. You better keep these boots with you. The Secret Service might not let me approach you. You're going to be with the presidential party and all that. Yeah, no, don't worry about it. So as soon as I walked in with the boots, they were confiscated by the Secret Service, and this advance man took them. And he said, no, you can't do this. It's not part of the program. You can't do the boots. And so he took the boots away, and I said, you're going to be sorry. So anyway, Chick walks up to the platform, and one of the White House advance men whispers in his ear, Chick, remember, you're not to make any speeches. You just introduce the president. So Chick is just terrified, you know. He didn't want to cross the White House, but he knew we were upset if he didn't follow our advice. So he did go up there, and he gave the speech. He didn't remember giving it later. He just was a blank.
So he was terrified.
He was terrified, but he did a great job. Mm-hmm. And then after Reagan's speech, Chick walked up and he said, I'd like to present this pair of tuxedo boots from my Western Emporium store. Mike, where are those boots? And, of course, I'm at the back of the hall in a roped-off area, and this White House advance man is kicking his foot up in the air and tearing out his hair, and he's red as a beet. I said, I told you it was going to be very embarrassing. Everybody, you know, Reagan shrugged, Chick shrugged, no boots. Would have been a good picture.
Yeah.
But you can't anticipate every situation in politics.
You know, the Las Vegas Sun in February had an interesting story I did not know about Kerry saving Heck's life. Is that true?
That's true. One day, this must have been in the late John Kerry of Massachusetts, mm-hmm. in the probably the most liberal member of the Senate, certainly one of them, and Chick was one of the most conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, I guess they were eating lunch in the senator's dining room over at the Capitol, and Chick choked on a piece of meat, and he went out into the hall, and he was about to die. And Senator Kerry did the Heimlich maneuver on him and got the food dislodged. And so the next day, Chick set up a meeting in Senator Kerry's office where all of Chick's staff went over there and to thank Senator Kerry for saving our jobs.
Yeah, right.
He was very charming. And you know, I was very impressed with Kerry, but I don't think all of it came across during the campaign.
No, that's one of the things, and we're almost out of time, but that's one of the things about politics, about television, as a journalist, a newsman, entertainers. Some guys, it just doesn't translate. Others...
Yeah, off camera, they're great, but yeah, once you turn it on,
and others,
they get stiff,
just boring, come out well.
Yeah, it's hard to figure. It's really hard to figure.
The I think the cold personality, cool, Mr. Cool type, seems to play well.
Yeah, it does. I don't know. This next...
See, you're laid back, and so let's reason. You look really good.
Well, thanks.
I'm very, frenetic, and I've done television, but it's tough to cool down.
Oh, yeah. It really is. But, you mentioned before how things have changed in 30 years, 35 years. Not only radio and television, when it used to be fun, I don't think it's fun anymore. It's become cutthroat. Consultants make decisions and have nothing to do with the news.
Oh, I know. And the political front, that could be a whole subject of a show. Politicians don't think anymore. They talk to the consultants. It's just like, in my opinion, broadcast radio has refined itself out of existence. It's so boring because they take rid of all the negatives. It's not fun anymore.
That's right.
And the guys, one or two around that still are able to do that because their names do have big audiences because people could identify. But back in our days when we first started, we were all characters.
That's right. We didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah,
that,
right.
That probably made it more.
Well, yeah, you talk about KTUL radio when they had sold and they had 4 or 5 months.
Oh, you
probably had higher ratings than they
oh,
got.
Sure. It's too bad we didn't have that recorded for posterity. But the station had been sold, but there's a lag time before you get the FCC's approval. And so during that time...
You all were working, but you knew it would probably be history.
Oh, well, yeah. We didn't care what was said. So we spent all of our time trying to break each other up. And mostly it was done through the intercom between the control room and the newsroom. Usually you'd only speak on that intercom during commercials and tell the guy, you'll have like 30 seconds coming out of this commercial. But now, because the station had been sold, we didn't care, so we would just right in the middle of his newscast say, you're doing a great job, man, keep it up,
right.
Speed it up, you're lagging.
Yeah, I like the Ku Klux Klan joke.
Oh, yeah, and then one day...
This will be a good way to close the show.
During the civil rights news was all happening in there, and the intercom the newsman was reading one of those civil rights stories, and intercom said, you're doing a great job, man, in a deep southern voice. And he looks up to see this guy waving a torch dressed in a white cape, and it looked like a Klansman, and he was this burning torch going back and forth, and it's kind of hard to... It just breaks your train of thought, when you see Klansmen in the control room while you're reading a civil rights story. But the lawn sprinklers would go off next to you.
Yeah, they took a lawn sprinkler in one time. You got some great stories in this book, and I can't recommend it highly enough. They can order it, of course, at the usual places, and we have a link to it as well, How High Can a Guy Stoop by Mike Miller. And Myron, I've enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's his real name, folks.
Yeah. I changed that when I reached the age of reason, hopefully. But by the book, I think you'll enjoy it. And it's a little different slant on radio, TV, news, and politics, and it's more what really goes on and not just what you think is going on.
Thank you very much. This is Jerry Pippin, and we're broadcasting from Muskogee, Oklahoma, at Shadowwood Mall, Entertainment Mall, the home of the movie company, a couple of radio stations upstairs, and our palatial studio here in the lobby.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Mike.
Thank you, Jerry. I enjoyed it.
Roberta Scott on location producer. Also some information from our researcher, Jane Swartling. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Cheers.
Give it all.